Welcome back. We're wrapping up another edition of Coast to Coast AM. We've got an hour left together. If you have calls and questions regarding tonight's case, anything that you'd like to know more about, give us a call. You can share those with us throughout the hour. We're talking with our guests, Stephen Lumley and Russ Kellett, about the book, The Berwyn Mountains Incident Revealed. All right, Russ, two documents, especially the one regarding the flash bombing that took place. Talk to us about this, and how did you come into possession of this document, which, you know, seems to support everything that kind of hinges this whole story together?
Yeah, it was quite easy. Because of the story, what I've been given, and the witness testimony and everything, and looking on the map, I basically thought, well, look, everybody's just centralizing on one area all the time, as if this thing just turned up over the Berwyn Mountains, right, yeah? So what I did was, obviously, reading the story, I thought, well, look, if this is happening out in the Irish Sea, right, yeah, let's start looking for, you know, some witnesses around there and seeing, you know, what's going on. And the best place to start is to basically go to somebody who would be watching the sea, like Coast Guards. So I got my disc out and had a look for the Coast Guard, quite central to sort of like North Wales, etc. And I rung up and I spoke to somebody there and asked them if they had any records of anything that happened on, you know, this day, you know, sort of like on the 23rd of January 1974. And, it's a long time back, is that? But I will have a look for our records. I says, okay, no problem. And they said, well, do you want to put it in writing? So I thought, smart cookie, yeah, right. I had a lot going on at this time. There were people really ill in my family and what have you. And so I thought, right. And I knew I was going to be away, you know, sort of like. So I thought, right, I will send a letter and I will get it, you know, sort of like, so that when I get back, you know, sort of like I'll have a look sort of thing, you know. And the other thing as well, I thought, well, because people, I've been on television a few times talking about UFOs and what have you, so I thought, well, if I use this other name, basically, it'll keep, you know, people off that, oh, yeah, it must be about UFOs. I just said anything, you know, going on in the skies, you know, around the Irish Sea and North Wales and Liverpool, you know. And lo and behold, I had a phone call saying, you know, like, yeah, I've got, you know, a letter here, and it's, you know, sort of like for you, you know, you wrote off to the Coast Guard. Now, I spoke to this person, I rung this person up again, because her boss originally had gone away, you see. When I rung up again, you know, I said, you know, got the letter and, you know, thank you very much. And looking at the letter, he says here, further to the inquiry regarding possible UFO sightings or other information, I have now checked through the information that we have available at our station. Although there's not a great many logs, logbooks, ends that for that period of time, I have only been able to find one entry of any interest during the late afternoon, early evening on the 23rd of January 1974. There was an exercise from Jerby Range, which is the Isle of Man, it says. The exercise was called Photo Flash, and Coast Guards were advised to expect at least 10 aircraft taking part and up to 80 flashes. 10 aircraft, 80 flashes. I don't think they used that many during the Second World War. You know, this is to originally Photo Flash to highlight ground troops below at night time, right? Yeah. In other words, to highlight the enemy, light up the enemy, right? Yeah. And they found that also it could be used for submarines, etc. 10 aircraft, 80 flash bombs. Flash bombs, which, you know, if you read about thought flash bombs, very volatile. Yeah, they'll basically burn through metal, concrete, you name it. They're dropping these around North Wales. Yeah? Think about it. There's, you know...
But if these bombs are so dangerous... If these bombs are so dangerous as well, aren't they shooting them off right near this flotilla of ships, this large mass of ships that include possibly a NASA ship, an American battleship?
Of course, yeah. They would have to. You know, they're lighting up the whole sea to find these, you know. And the thing is, there was never reports of sort of like lots of aircraft. And, you know, sort of like the photo flash, which you could say, well, could the photo flash, if there's 80 photo flash bombs going off, could there be the UFOs? Do you see how I'm looking at things? I'm thinking, right. Could this be the UFOs? You know, people seeing these. But this is more or less out to sea. You know, sort of like, so obviously what they're doing, you know, they're dropping them. And the aircraft communicating, giving the actual grid references to the battleships and the minesweepers where to drop the actual charges.
Now, Stephen, if I understood this too, they were denying that this ever took place. So this letter coming out of there actually helped to substantiate the basis for the story, because now you were able to prove the first part, which is the photo bombing, or not photo bombing, but the flash bombing of the water looking for these craft, which was the original part of the story, which would then make sense to why these craft took off and went from there. Correct?
That's right. It's another piece of the jigsaw. And the interesting thing why people think the letter isn't correct is that it doesn't come through the correct channels. So it's an inadvertent mistake made by somebody who works in the Coast Guard, who replied directly to Russ. And there is a reference in the BGS files in Edinburgh that there was people, there were witnesses on the Isle of Man who reported seeing these photo flash explosions and asking questions about what they could be. So the confirmation that the photo flash exercise actually took place that night where Russ said it did underlines the fact there was probably minesweepers and frigates nearby as well. So it's all part of the story, yeah.
There's been some hubbub regarding this letter. I know online I've probably had about 20 emails that have come through to me since I announced that you'd be our guest this evening. People stating, look, they've debunked this letter. It's the letterhead's off. The things are in the wrong place.
Who debunked the letter?
Let's see if I've got the name sitting here again. I apologize. Scott Felton, it looks like, is one of the people that had brought this to us. That's why I was curious what your thoughts were on this, and that if this
no
is
comment.
The case.
No comment. Well, let's stick to facts, shall we?
You see, that the problem is if you, Dave, ask for the confirmation from the Coast Guard, they will send a denial. So Russ struck out, really. He was extremely fortunate that somebody sent him a very personalised letter who actually understood what he was trying to ask. Whereas if you and I ask now, that we wouldn't get that same reply.
No,
and it isn't in the official files as a reply.
All right, let's take our break. We'll open up phone lines if people have questions about this specific case, its importance to ufology and what's going on out there. Were their bodies recovered? What is the story, and who saw what? We'll find out more from our guests when we return right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host this evening, Dave Schrader. Our guests, Russ Kellett, Stephen Lumley. We're talking about the Berwyn Mountains incident revealed. There was another document that you got, and you said it was from one of the MPs. Is that correct?
That's right. Well, it was a letter, right, that he'd actually asked a question about what had happened on that night. But the problem is, they wouldn't give me that letter. What they said was, it was the Understate Secretary, John Brymore, He'd asked, and what they said is, we can give you sort of like a watered-down version of what was actually said. But and this is why it says, basically, the under Exemption 2 of Code, which, let me have a look now, respects on release of internal discussion and advice, I am satisfied. It basically says it may cause harm and frankness to internal discussion. So what they're saying is, you know, sort of like they're not really going to play ball with me. They're not going to give me what the reply back is, if you see what I mean.
All right, understand. Now, with the crash and the remains, were there bodies that were reclaimed from any of this wreckage or living organisms that were found?
Yeah, there was the five. The gentleman was at the side of the road, said that as they was told to leave the area, these things were basically made to get in vehicles or a vehicle there. But the strange thing about this, what was said was that some of the troops had gone to the craft, one of them had got in the craft, and there was three or four of the military, the soldiers, manhandled this craft that was like hovering above the ground, right, yeah, and manhandled it and basically got it across and up onto the road, onto this flat-back vehicle.
And,
so
they
said, you know, they must have done, to be able to just get in it, you know, one of them got in it and the others manoeuvred it, and said that they must have done this before. They must have come across the same, you know, you wouldn't, if you hadn't done that before, you wouldn't know what you were dealing with. You wouldn't go anywhere near a craft like that just in case it were radioactive or whatever.
Right, like they were like they were prepared and knew how to deal with something like this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right.
There's no doubt about it.
We've got wild card Tim in Racine, Wisconsin. You had a question for our guests. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hey, how you doing all this morning?
Doing great.
That's a great show you got going here. I was
Thank
thinking
you.
This is all a kind of hoax, but then the more I listened to it, it's kind of like you can't put all this together in your head, you know, make it up. But my question is, I haven't really heard tonight, when I think of the service, especially the Navy, even in airplanes, you have cameras, okay? And then in the Navy, I'm sure at that time they probably had 35 millimeters still. You know, is someone rolling the camera here? I want to know that. That's my question. I'll hang up and I'll listen to my answer off there. Thanks. Love the show.
Thank you very much, Tim. Was there any footage? Have you found any of the information in the records that might preclude to the fact that, or allude rather to the fact that there is some existing evidence somewhere about this on photographic or video proof?
Hello?
Yeah, Russ, can you hear me?
Yeah, basically, my phone died, and I'm on a different phone now. But
okay,
yeah,
well,
I was cut off then.
The question basically is, with the research that you've done, is there been any hints to the fact that there might be some photographic or video proof from?
Yes, there is. Yeah,
the cameras.
I can
okay.
tell you now. One of the guys was a keen photographer, amateur photographer, and when they was told to move from the area. They did move, and they went to Wales. Being Wales, wherever you go, there's a mountain range, and there was overlooking. And I didn't see these, but my friend and colleague had been shown the photographs of, you know, what looked like a saucer, a flying saucer, and what have you, that night at this location.
Steve, let me ask you, as a journalist trying to remain objective, just to tell the story as the facts come in, what do you find from this specific story? What are some of the facts you find to be the most compelling proof that this actually happened and that, you know, there was craft down and that this hunt was on?
When I put the timeline together from the police logs and witness statements, you come across several hours of concern calls to the police, and people are very descriptive, and they're wanting to help the police about the explosions and the things that they can see. So there are, we've got the five witnesses who allegedly took photographs, which I haven't seen. But apparently, the one of the reasons that they haven't released a picture of the UFO is that it looks like a car hubcap, and people think it's faked. So that doesn't really strengthen their story. But the other is, it's all the other elements that come together. As I say, the people who witnessed what happened that night, and they're talking frankly about what they saw, the soldiers who say, you know, something definitely happened that night. And then when we go back to this, even if we take out the element of aliens and UFOs, we're still left with something really, really interesting that happened that night. And we just touched on it there about the Bryn Mawr John, who was the Under Secretary of State. Now, he was new to the job, and he asked a question of his civil servants, what actually happened in the Berwyn Mountains that night. He was given a full and frank explanation. Notes were taken, and that document still exists. Now, I have that document number, but we can't get to that document because, as Russ says, it will affect the future candor of internal discussion. So something happened. That's indisputable. And we've got all these other things that have happened since that sort of cloud the issue, like we've got an earthquake, we've got meteorites, we've got people who only see one UFO on the mountainside. And then we've got people, when you start looking at the timeline, there is another UFO there. People can hear missile strikes and other explosions. So I think there's enough within the story for people to stand back and say, this really is, and it really is an interesting story. And as you said at the very top of the program, many people see this as Britain's own Roswell.
Right, and I mean, if it comes to fruition, and, you know, I know, what did they say? It's part of the 50-year hush policy that we might hear something 10 years out. That's when records might begin to start to leak out regarding the specific case?
No, I think it's under the 30-year rule, and we're not going to see that. I can't believe that they will reveal this document.
It'll be reclassified.
Why at this point? Why continue to keep it quiet? Why do you think that they won't expose that?
Wow. That's a whole... You say that is a fantastic question, isn't it? Because then by revealing what happened at the Berwyns, you then open up a whole can of worms that no government wants to answer. That's the thing, isn't it? So whatever this document discusses, I think it's going to answer a lot of questions about not only what happened that night, but what has happened since then.
Well, you would think, too, with the 50-year rule, if that is in effect, at this point, it's a story that, you know, it just seems funny to me that these governments, the UK, Canada, you've got Australia, you've got Russia, that have come forward and released some of their documents and some of their stories, allowing us to believe that there has been some kind of interaction, that they have taken UFOs very seriously, and in some cases that they believe that we have had contact. I just, if that's the case, then why hold back some stories and not others? What would be so globally impacting about the Berwyn incident over any other story that they would keep that one hidden but release stories that could be just as equally devastating to you know, the fabric of our belief system, whether theologically or you know, scientifically, well, that it exists?
Well, I think the issue about the Berwyn Mountains is that the document probably refers to documentary evidence, physical evidence of what actually happened, and all three armed services were involved, and the craft was taken off, and it was obviously analysed and sent to other places. You've got live and injured beings taken off and treated. So let's take a break.
We'll come back. Coast to Coast AM continues with more of the Berwyn Mountains incident right after this. Welcome back to the show. I'll be back with you tomorrow night. George Norrie is out on assignment. I'll be filling in, and we'll be talking with Whitley Strieber. Underwater and underground alien bases. Do they exist? We'll find out what Willie has to say about that tomorrow night. Let's go to the phones. West of the Rockies, Thomas, welcome to Coast AM. What did you want to share with us this evening?
Hello, Dave. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
See, is it possible, one of the things that unifies the great mystery about all this ufology and all of this the predisposition towards technologies and why we don't know who these alien beings are, is that it's probably true, or at least it might be true, that we have advanced far beyond any of their imaginations in technology, and that they're no longer in a position to exercise superiority in just about any regard. Does that make any sense to you?
Certainly. I mean, it could. Again, you've got to look at the fact that if they're able to traverse the universe or dimensions, you know, realities, however they're getting to us, I still think that if they've got that kind of ability and able to travel in a timely manner to get to us, their superiority is still probably leaps and bounds above what it would take, for us to be able to protect ourselves and deal with it. But thanks for chiming in. That's a great point. I appreciate that. Let me ask you, Stephen and Russ, with this case, with the damage that was done.
Can I just answer Dave's question there?
Sure, please.
Yeah, the thing is, super technology. Well, we certainly showed them what super technology was on that night, didn't we? Because they brought three down. That's for definite. There is one thing what it looks like there's a possibility here, that we had something new, right, yeah, that we was armed with, and they basically used it for the first time that night. And that could have been satellites. There's a good, on these documents and these maps what I've got here, it shows you satellites tracking. Now, the thing is, what I'm thinking, and I suggested this to Steve, and it's a suggestion, could it be that the satellites in the sky could basically, see what was going on and give more accurate pinpoint positions of these things underwater, for one thing. And like I say, three of these craft ended up on the ground. So that just shows you how super technology there were. The other thing I'd like to say as well, the day before this happened, there was a Canberra aircraft taking photos of all this area. And after it happened, the same Canberra aircraft was taking photographs afterwards as well. Why was that? It's never been explained.
That is part of the mysteries. That's what we're talking about tonight, the Berwyn Mountains incident. Our guests, Russ Kellett and Stephen Lumley, will take our final break, and we'll be back with more Coast to Coast AM. Wildcard Line, Vincent in Spokane, Washington. Welcome to Coast AM. What did you want to talk with us about this evening?
I was wondering exactly why the UFOs were being chased by the military. Like, why would the military be interested in them, and how exactly did the military figure out the UFOs were there?
Well, they'd mentioned a little bit earlier in the show that that there'd been some activity and strangeness in that area. But why do you believe that they were chasing them out? Was it a chance to show them our might? Do you believe that that might have been part of why we were flushing them out, Russ?
Oh, yeah. It's without a shadow of a doubt. Thanks for the question, by the way. Like I say, it had become apparent before, a year or two before, that there was having problems in this area. And can I just say as well, it wasn't the first time the Jews fought a flash, and where there'd been an incident around Liverpool, because in the 50s, they also had used fought a flash as actually an excuse of why there'd been a UFO seen. And that was in the 50s, if I remember rightly. But going back to the question, yeah, new technology, what we had with satellites, and there was something else that we can't put a finger on it, but these guys had been there for some time before. some time after. So they was ready to rock and roll with these guys.
No, and thank you very much for calling, Vincent. I know in the book you also mentioned, Stephen, that that area was and is a very strange place. What are some of the accounts that go on in that area? Time slips, portals, strange encounters. What can you tell us specifically about that area, even today?
Well, along the coast of North Wales is an interesting area for ufologists. I mean, even today, people are still finding these strange anomalies that you step through them, and it's like you're going to a different dimension, a different time. People are seeing anomalies in the sky. There's meant to be a UFO base off the coast of North Wales, underwater. But this goes back to the Celtic times. And even Arthurian legends say there were King Arthur was fighting dragons under the Berwyn Mountains. So there's a very strong history of unusual activity, unusual sightings, unusual happenings. And they're going on today. That's a really interesting thing.
Let's go. We'll take another call. We've got east of the Rockies, Danny in South Dakota. Welcome to the show, Danny. What did you want to share with us this evening?
Hi. My greatest curiosity is the piece of metal that was sent out and was stated earlier in the show that the test came back inconclusive. If this is an actual piece of an unidentified flying object, I mean this is the nail in the coffin. There's other UFO groups out there. I mean, they're all over the internet. I'm sure if the guests reached out to these other organizations, I'm sure they even have connections to, major universities that could easily, test it. That's really my question.
I agree with you. And what is the future of the pieces that you have, Russ? Are they going to be tested, Stephen? I think Russ had said earlier that there might be some more testing done. What's going on now?
Well, we've tried lots of different avenues to get people to test this piece of metal, and it is an unusual piece of metal. It's like highly refined aluminium, but it feels fluid. It's really unusual. Now, the hang-up is that no one will test the metal without me or Russ being there. Now, I mean, Russ is willing to trust me with it, but I can't let that piece of metal out of my sight. Now, everybody we've asked, we've even offered to pay for the testing with universities and things like that. Nobody can do the testing within a day. That if we could find a way of doing it, we will do it. And Russ has been quite upfront about that. He's got a piece of metal allegedly from a UFO, and he's willing to have it tested, but it must be under strict criteria.
Well, isn't there, with the shows, I know Giorgio Tsoukalos has a new series coming out. The Ancient Alien series is out. Isn't there one of those shows that are high profile enough that definitely, it would only behoove them to be able to work with somebody like you so that they could prove the existence that this material, because again, it sounds very much like the Roswell piece.
Yeah.
Very similar. But then again, it's very similar to a piece that I have seen just recently. Came from the Rendlesham Forest incident that's been up on Facebook just recently. But the thing is, can you imagine this, right, yeah? I have been given, chosen by these men, right, yeah, with this piece of craft, right, yeah? And it's been with me now for 14, 15, 16, best, 20 years, right, yeah? Now, I'm the custodian of that, right, yeah? And I don't want to have it go missing. Do you see what I'm saying?
Right, well, and I understand that, but that's why I said if you did it with a high-profile show, one of these groups, who they're going to go out of their way to keep tabs on that because they want that proof. It would be a killer for any one of these shows.
I'm going out of my way to keep tabs on it, David. I'm going out of my way to keep tabs on it. I've kept tabs on it for almost 20 years, and sort of like, you know. And the other thing is this: I'm not bothered about how high profile anybody is. The fact of the matter is, right? Yeah, I want to be there, right? Yeah, I want to see what's being done to it, right? Yeah, not, you know, it's a case of and it's straight back. It doesn't go for a second out of my sight.
Well, now, we know that this place is so active, and even today, as Stephen was telling us, with UFO activity, being that you yourself are an abductee, have you gone to this location to investigate it personally, to look for perhaps scrap pieces?
I've almost lived there.
Okay.
I've almost lived there at my friend and colleague's house, which is just up the way. And we've had photographs there. I've got photographs of me at the side of the road where the craft had got pictures of the area where it came down, you know. I've held two meetings, one in Llandrillo and one in Bala. And had so many people turned up to the White Lion that it were a fire hazard. You know, there were so many people there, you know, so like we had to ask people to leave.
And you know? While you've been there, have you had some of these strange portal-like encounters with anything there? Have you felt that anything has telepathically tried to reach out to you to give you more information or help you on this quest?
I had one strange thing happen where a gentleman after the meeting, when I was outside, came up and he started talking to me. He was dressed all in white, and there was another guy all in white as well, because I thought it was the same one at first. I turned around, and he must have been in his 70s or 80s, and with a hat on, you know, like you'd see people dressed like this, you know, at cricket functions, etc. Very well-spoken gentleman. You know, sort of like, and he was talking, you know, about what had gone on, etc. You know, and he'd said, you know, that these things, you know, are still around today. And funnily enough, it's exactly what the five. Now, the thing is, what Stephen hasn't said in the book, because he wants to stick to facts, is that these guys said that they'd actually met. Aliens after that, right, yeah? And a warning that these areas are still active even to this very day, right, yeah? Now,
that these aliens from the crash are still active today?
These areas, you know, where these crashes happen and where these aliens are, right, yeah, are still active. But unfortunately, what happened... as time goes along, you know, things happen. And one of the reasons I wasn't able to get out as much as I should have, I became ill. My mum was on a life support machine. She came home, then I started being ill. My dad was taken ill, then he died. And then I started being ill again. So, you know, like I say, I haven't been out and to get this piece of metal checked myself, like I say. But all these facts... that these gentlemen were talking about these areas of great importance, right, yeah? And they were saying that they're as active today as it was back then. And to be very, very careful, very, very careful, a very, very warning, a big warning there to people, you know, sort of like these things... you know, it could cause death.
Are you concerned for yourself, Russ, or for Stephen, that by going forward with this information and continuing to release it, that it could put you in danger?
Look, you always get people. Now, the thing is, you know, you always get threats. I mean, I had threats. I was told if they didn't get me, they'd probably get somebody in my family. Strangely enough, my mum did, you know, become seriously ill and on a life support machine.
And, you know, sort of like I was told, you know, I think you better be careful, you know, because, you know, she's never...
So you believe that the reason that your mother took ill and ended up passing was because of your interest in the story?
It was my dad that passed. My mum's still here.
Okay.
But, you know, the thing is, it could be anybody. I run a very big group, an international group. And, you know, I had all sorts of information passed on to me. I had all sorts of threats passed on to me. But, you know, who's to say it's not some disgruntled ufologist? I come across them, you know, sort of like telling me, oh, this hasn't happened, that hasn't happened. You know, there's nothing worse than somebody that's in this subject. You always get them. And sort of like, if I was that bothered, you know, sort of like, I wouldn't be able to go out of the door. You know what I mean? If you lived like that, you'd never go out of the door anymore, would you? If something wanted me dead, it would have happened a long time ago.
Great point. Stephen, we're wrapping up here. What do you think is the most important part of this book? Why is it important to get this story out now, a 40-year-old story? Why do you think people should know about it?
I think for two reasons. One, it is one of the best documented UFO cases out there, and the fact people are still talking about it. But in the course of putting the book together, we answer some questions, but then we raise other questions in return. I mean, if we could get the document from the civil service about the briefing to the Undersecretary of State and answer a few more questions or have more soldiers come forward, I think we'd have something for a real open and honest debate about whether UFOs and aliens exist and visit us.
Trying to remain objective as a journalist, when you look at these cases and you hear more and more of these stories, in your opinion, where do you stand? Are we being visited by otherworldly visitors, Stephen, or are you still on the fence about this?
Personally, I believe we are. As a professional journalist, I always sit on the fence. And as I said earlier on, the thing about the Berwyn Mountains, even if we take out the UFOs and the aliens, we're still left with a very, very unusual incident that occurred in 1974, and nobody's been managed to give us a full 100% answer about what happened or might have happened.
Well, gentlemen, I can't thank you enough for spending the evening with us for the last 4 hours, sharing your story. We've got links up to both guests at coasttocoastam.com. Stephen Lumley, thank you so much for being here this evening.
Thank you, Dave. It's been a pleasure.
Russ Kellett, thank you very much for your time, for your diligence in putting the research together, and for being a part of the story. Gina, Nathan, back home, thank you very much for helping out this evening. Tim Dennis, my engineer here in Minnesota. Special thanks to Lisa Lyon and George Norrie as well. I'll be back tomorrow night hosting Coast to Coast AM with my very special guest. And Whitley Strieber will be here to talk about underground and underwater alien bases. That's right here on Coast to Coast AM.